Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. I'm Darren Hefty along with my brother Brian. We're going to be talking about soil sampling on our show today and what you do with that, how to set up your field so you can get them sampled in a way that really reflects what your production is going to be and helps you to move that production forward. It should be a fun discussion today. We've got some great guests lined up, and we also welcome your phone calls if you'd like to join the discussion, 844-44-AG-PHD. Or you could send us an email, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. Well, you know, Brian, we just recently had the AgPhD Soils Clinic, and at that clinic, one of the questions that got asked a lot was, wow, you guys used to do 5-acre grids, and you were doing like 2.5-acre grids or zone sampling. Now you're doing 1-acre grids. What do you learn on those really small grids that you didn't get out of the other types of testing?
Almost everything that we end up doing on our farm is based on our previous mistakes. So I'll just give you a little background here. Back when we were doing great big zones, or even to the point where we were doing 5-acre grids, we misidentified certain spots where we said, hey, this pH is too low. Let's put some lime on it. We put lime on it. And then as we did smaller grid testing, we realized, uh-oh, we shouldn't have spent the money on lime. Now we raise the pH too high. Now our yields have started to go down because we raised the pH too high. And now we need to spend more money to get the pH back down again. So we're putting some elemental sulfur on. So anyway, the point is this. If we just would have invested a few more dollars in soil testing up front, we wouldn't have, number one, overspent on lime. We wouldn't have, number two, seen our yields go down. And we wouldn't have, number three, needed to spend more money in elemental sulfur to fix the problem that we caused because we screwed up in the first place. So what we strongly advise you to do is go to really small grids to begin with. Now, a lot of people say, hey, I haven't done a lot of soil testing, so let me just start with the bigger stuff, and then I'll see where I go from there, and then maybe eventually I'll do some little grids. Nope, don't do that. That's the wrong thing to do. I'd rather have you do no soil testing than start out with enormous grids or enormous zones. In my opinion, for the most part, you're probably just wasting your money. So just take one field, or even a half field, if you don't believe what I'm talking about, and do some 1-acre grids. And then eventually, here's the hope. I'm not saying you have to be 1-acre grids long term, because that costs about $16 an acre, whereas you can do 5-acre grids for like $5 an acre. Okay, so, I mean, it is going to cost a little bit more money. Oh, and by the way, that's figuring, if you ran stuff through the AgPhD Soils app, we do have a volume deal for soil sampling. If you start running a whole bunch of tests, like in our farm, the last couple of years, we've probably run over 3,000 soil tests because we have gone to 1-acre grids on a lot of stuff. But anyway, here's where I'm going with all this. I would suggest going really small grids to begin with and then see what you got. And you know what? If you can start putting some grid points together, awesome. Now you're able to save money. You don't have to do as much testing. If you realize, ooh, wow, I got a lot of variability, and you can even that out in a short amount of time, in a lot of cases you can. There are going to be fertility differences, soil pH differences, just a lot of things where you go, hey, I'm going to use variable rate application, and I'm going to get the right fertilizer in the right spot. I'm going to even these things out, and now eventually you can go to bigger grids. Okay, but I'd really, really strongly encourage you, start with 1-acre grids, do that, and then go from there. Now, if you want to do zones, I don't have any problem with zone sampling other than this. Don't tell me about a 10-acre zone. That's not going to be very good. And if you don't believe that, do the same exact thing we did on our farm to prove this out. We take the same field and we did zones. Take the same field, did big grids. Take the same field, did very small grids all in the same year. And then see what you see for variance. And when you start going, uh-oh, had I not done the 1-acre grids here, I would have put the wrong stuff in the wrong spot. Okay, now you see what I'm talking about. You know, the difference between $11 an acre, when we start talking about fertility, over application, under application, all those kind of things, $11 comes back real fast. And this isn't $11 an acre every year. This might only be $11 an acre once or twice in your farming career. And where I'm coming up with the $11 is the difference between going 5-acre grids and 1 acre. I mean, pretty much everybody out there is doing 5-acre grids or 2.5. So all I'm saying is just run some 1-acre grids and you'll see what I'm talking about. Okay, and I don't care how exactly you do this, what lab exactly you're running stuff through. It doesn't make any difference to me. My point is that we've got so much variability in almost every single field. And I know this because I look at soil tests literally every day. People constantly send us soil tests. And when you hear us analyze these things on the radio or on TV, almost invariably we say, hey, there's a lot of variability in this field. So you're going to need to do one thing over here, another thing over here, another thing over there.
Well, we see it with the yield monitors too, Brian. We know exactly that it's not even out there because really, are you going to say on a 40-acre field, oh, the rainfall must have been so much different in this area than that? Come on. I mean, obviously there's drainage issues out there.
Where he's going with that is, why is your yield different? When you are in a field and you see variance from 300 bushel corn down to 100 bushel corn, well, obviously the rainfall was the same, so stop blaming the weather. The problem is we need to look in the mirror a lot more and say, what else can I do to fix this field? In most cases, it's drainage, dirt work, fertility. You do those things, and now you're in a lot better shape. And certainly, you can pick different varieties. You can spray fungicide. You can solve insect problems. I mean, there are a lot of other things that can happen out there, too. But it all comes back, in most cases, to management. Because the weather is good enough for all of us to get more yield. We just have to figure out how to maximize what we can produce with whatever the weather happens to be this year.
We're going to talk about soil sampling on today's program. Of course, that discussion will morph into a lot of other things, especially yield. We'd love to get your feedback and your questions at 844-44-AG-PHD as well. Stay tuned.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from the Morton studio today and talking about soil sampling. We mentioned to start the show off today that we had an Ag PhD soils clinic earlier this winter, and it was fun looking at soil tests because I'm seeing more and more tests that are being run with micronutrients. It's awesome. I remember a few years ago, even on our show, we would get all kinds of tests. It was a majority of the tests that just had N, P, and K and little more. I've got Jim Fosching on with us right now with Midwest Labs. And Jim, are you seeing that kind of trend as well?
Good afternoon. Yes, we are. One thing we noticed on samples coming into the lab this past fall was the increased number of those samples that were asking for micronutrient tests. You know, not just maybe a zinc, but broad spectrum across the board on all the micronutrients. So, yes, we've seen that. We also get a lot of questions, more questions on what those numbers mean than we have in past years.
Yeah, it's great. It's great to get people looking into, all right, what are the details? And it's not just numbers on a page to them. They really want to know what it is. So, Jim, let's talk about this a little bit. Let's just say a farmer gets started, and I know we've got listeners that really haven't been actively involved in the soil sampling. They maybe have a fertilizer supplier or something pulling some samples for them. What would be a good way to really step things up versus one sample per field? Where do you start with growers?
Depending on field size, depending on, you know, what their past experiences have been. Maybe they have been using someone else to sample for them that have been doing composite samples, for example, 15 to 20 acre areas of the field that they combine into one soil sample. Maybe take a look at some of your soils maps and see if within that framework there's a better way of soil testing. Maybe breaking those down into smaller sample sizes. Grids are still continuing to grow throughout our trade area. Or if nothing else, look at just sampling by your soil types, sampling by yield maps. There's a lot of different ways to look at it rather than, you know, the one large sample out of one large field. Break it down a little bit, try to get a little bit more information. You'll be surprised at what you see.
One of the questions we got a lot, Jim, throughout the winter was phosphorus. And on some of the tests we've gotten from Midwest Labs, this would be a question from a listener. On some of the questions that some of the tests we've run, we've seen both the Olson bicarbonate P test and the Bray P1 and P2 tests. Why would you run both, and where do you like to see, what types of soil do you like to see each one used in?
Well, the Bray extractions were designed primarily for acidic soil types, those soils where pHs may be below 7.0, 6.9. The numbers that we generate with a Bray extraction on those have been confirmed by years and years of correlation and calibration by our Midwest universities. So we're really comfortable with the data we generate with a Bray extraction. We move to the Olson extraction. When pHs start getting up above 7.1, 7.2, and some folks have they want to see that bicarbonate or Olson test at a 7. Some clients want to see it at a 7.2. So we accommodate whatever our clients' wishes are. Higher pH soils, you know, once you get up into that 7.5, 7, even 7.3 and above, where you see excesses of calcium carbonate in those systems, that can tie up some of the phosphorus, or will tie up some of the phosphorus on a Bray 1 extraction and reduce that number to a very low number. The Olson test is more well calibrated to those high pH type of soils to give you a workable phosphorus value. And we will report all three of those on a test, just so you have something to compare it to.
We get questions from all over the country, Jim, and one of the questions that we've gotten recently was, are there different testing methods being used in the Midwest versus what growers will use in the East Coast or down in the Delta?
There are. Most of the Midwest universities' research work in past years and decades has been on, again, the Bray Olson test for phosphorus, ammonium acetate extractions for the cations. As you start moving east and southeast in particular, we start seeing more Malic 3 extractions, a single extraction to generate data on all those different elements. It's a little bit stronger acid than some of the methods that we're using in the Midwest, so we'll see different sets of numbers when we make a comparison. We're able to correlate pretty well what those differences may be as far as being able to make a recommendation off of them, because we do those extractions as well for our clients in those areas that want to see those numbers and are used to seeing those numbers to generate a fertilizer recommendation for them.
How about on micros, Jim? Because we see a big difference. In our opinion, having run both of those tests on our farm, it sure appears like on some of the micros, like manganese, for example, we see pretty low numbers on the DTPA test, especially as our soil pHs rise, where our Malic tests will show a much higher number. We see the Malics kind of like, well, here's what's out in the soil, but the DTPA more like, here's what our crops are actually extracting. Would you say that's a fair guesstimate?
I would, and that goes back a little bit to the Malic tree being a stronger acid extraction. It's taking more of the manganese off of those exchange sites than we are able to do with the DTPA. In any personal testing that I've done in the past where I've pulled soil samples and tissue samples on the same day and seen a reduced manganese value, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 parts per million on a soybean or a corn plant, we see that being reflected in what the plant is taking up as far as our tissue test results. So I would agree with your statement, Darren, that the DTPA has shown you what that plant is seeing. The Malic extraction is telling you that, yes, there's more down there, but for whatever reason, it's being locked up or tied up, or maybe in a form that the DTPA method isn't pulling out.
One other question, kind of switching gears here just a little bit. So 2019 for a lot of growers was a pretty extreme weather year. In many cases, it was lots and lots of rain. And we've talked to a number of growers, including tests that we've run on our own farm, where tests have shown not very much nitrogen left, even after a soybean crop or a crop where we'd expect there to be nitrogen out in the field. What's the best way for growers going into this 2020 crop to figure out how much nitrogen carryover there really is going to be for this year's crop?
Well, that's a tough one, because we're not really sure what this spring season is going to be. If we know we've got a measured volume from last fall that's lower, if we have a wetter growing season this spring, we could still have some leaching of the nitrate in the soil profile. Probably what I would recommend to growers is get out there as soon as that soil is fit to get a good soil sample. And maybe recheck some of those sample depths for a nitrate reading. See where you're at. See if you had any kind of conversion over the early spring months of some of the stored nitrogen in the ammonia form back to a nitrate form. And or it doesn't always hurt to measure the ammonia form in the soil profile as well, just to get an idea of what your total nitrogen availability is of those two forms.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting spring for sure, especially with all the challenges we had last year. And soil sampling is one of those ways to get things back on track with this year's crop. Been talking with Jim Fashing with Midwest Labs. Jim, thank you so much. Really appreciate all the information.
Sure. Happy to be on.
You know, Brian, when we're talking about some of these things, we did get a bunch of tests pulled in the fall, but there were a lot of farm operations we talked to that didn't. I would say spring sampling is going to be just absolutely critical for them.
Well, yeah, I mean, we want to see sampling done at some point or another. I'm not too concerned about when exactly you do it, but if you get it done too late, then you got to keep in mind there might be some extra mineralization or use of that fertility, so the numbers could be a little bit more or less depending on when you're pulling samples.
We'll talk more about soil sampling coming up right after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
Bean growers continue to see yield loss from white mold across the Midwest this season. To maximize next year's crop, a white mold prevention strategy that includes Contans WG soil fungicide is a must for your farming operation. Applying Contans this fall to reduce the sclerotia in the soil is the most effective way to stop white mold at its source. Start a Contans white mold control strategy this fall or pay for it later in lost yield.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
You know a healthy crop is required for your best results. Simply put, balanced crop nutrition pays. AgriLiquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products to deliver those results. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you with your fertility decisions. AgriLiquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agriliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
White mold and sudden death syndrome are two of the most important fungal diseases in soybean production today. But did you know 40 to 50 million acres in the north central region are affected annually? When every season has different disease challenges, the question becomes, how can you ensure the best start for your soybeans no matter what? The answer is Heads Up Seed Treatment. Trusted by growers across the Midwest, Heads Up offers a new mode of action to prime your beans to help fight fungal disease. For more information, visit HeadsUpST.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from the Morton studio today, and I was thinking it was kind of funny. One of the questions that I had asked Jim Fashing was about if we need to do some nitrogen testing going into this season, and I'm just thinking about how much frost is in the ground on our farm. Aren't going to be able to do much there, but how about in a warmer place? And I was talking with Brian over the break, and he's like, yeah, what about if the ground doesn't freeze? How does that change things? Great segue into talking with Bo Shropshire out in California, who's a soil fertility and ag production consultant. Bo, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, guys. Appreciate it.
You know, when the ground doesn't freeze, that means you pretty much have to work 12 months out of the year. So I don't know. Maybe California's not so nice.
Well, it's most of the time we do have Chamber of Commerce weather, you know, but we've actually had, I think it was back in 1908, something like that. We had a little freeze here that affected things. I mean, it got cold enough that we froze a little bit of citrus up, but other than that, you know, our biggest thing is when it gets cold here, it will have ice in our lettuce till about 10 o'clock in the morning, and then we'll go ahead and start harvesting after that. So, yeah, and the ground never gets frozen like you guys do.
All right, so talk about soil sampling then, because you got a lot of different situations that many of the Midwest growers that we talk to don't have to face. You've got multiple crops out there. You got perennial crops. How does that change things in your soil sampling program?
Well, basically what we try to do is, you're going to have a difference between a cultivated crop and a perennial crop, as far as the depth of soil samples. You know, if it's a cultivated crop, we're going to take a sample about 6 3/4 inches, you know, in the aerobic zone. And because of compaction, we'll only pull about a 4-inch sample in those permanent crops, whether it be citrus or third-year alfalfa or, you know, 5-year-old Bermuda grass that we're raising for hay or for seed. So that's the one major change. Biggest thing is just trying to get make sure the guy gets on an annual program to where you're looking at those soils every year so that you can see what you need to do or what you have done and where you've progressed to.
You mentioned with compaction issues in some of the permanent crops. Is there anything done with that, or is there so many roots underneath that you'd have to disturb that you just kind of live with it?
Yeah, you try not to disturb the roots too much, Darren, because otherwise you can have a mess there because, you know, depending on you can have some light cultivation where maybe a guy goes in and does a light disking in the avenues between the trees or whatever, just, you know, to tear up, any weeds that may come up, go in with a piece of equipment to destroy the leaves and all the branches that you cut off, you know, through pruning to get rid of that stuff and work it down to a manageable size. But other than that, you pretty much don't stick anything in the ground around that thing to disturb those roots.
All right, talk to us then about the fields where you're raising vegetables and you're raising multiple crops in a single season. I would assume there's fertility applications going on all the way through. Is there just a once-a-year fertility plan and then it's set for multiple crops?
Well, what we'll do is, we'll pull a single soil sample through the year, but then as those crops that we're growing, we've got some crops here, like, say, for instance, baby leaf spinach, some of the leafy greens, you know, they're only going to be in the ground about 32 to 35 days, okay? So what we'll do is we'll go ahead and pull tissue samples to make sure that we know that the nutrients are coming through the roots. And if we don't, then we'll supply, nutrients through a foliar situation to make sure that we're, you know, maximizing the opportunity with the crop.
Yeah, that's interesting. In some ways, it sure sounds like fun to me that you get a crop in 32 or 35 days. And in other ways, it just sounds like an awful lot of work out there and a lot of things that could go wrong when a crop's growing that fast.
Well, true. There's a lot of things that go wrong. I mean, you know, you have weather situations that'll pop up and maybe you have mildew that comes in, say downy mildew that comes in, or maybe, you know, maybe you've got a situation with a particular field that maybe at that point in time in the year you start to have some nematodes show up or something. So yeah, there's lots of obviously some opportunities when you're growing an annual crop like that, that's a quick one. But but then we do a lot of crops here, you know, say alfalfa, sugar beets, those kinds of things. They're going to be in the ground. You know, alfalfa is going to be in the ground for a minimum of 3 years and maybe four. Although there are some hay stands here in the Imperial Valley that are 8, 9, 10 years old, but those are the exceptions to the rule. But most of it's 3 or 4 years. Sugar beets are a year annual deal. So, you know, we'll get into those kind of crops. And again, it's just one of those deals where you try to get soil samples on the front end, know what you've got, put on your amendments, and plan for the year, and then follow through with, you know, the tissue sampling. We may have a situation where if you're going from one crop to another and you're concerned about, say, nitrogen or something, we'll simply go out and pull a set of samples just for nitrates and run those, quickly just to kind of see where we're at. But other than that, I mean, it's like, yeah, it's a 24/7, 365 deal here.
Yeah, it does sound pretty exciting. And then you add the variable to that of irrigation water. How often is irrigation water tested? And are there a lot of amendments that have to be made to water if the water is not exactly what you want?
Well, normally the water that we're using here, this water that comes out of the Colorado River, that comes in via the All-American Canal into Imperial Valley. And so that water, while it will vary a little bit through the year, it's pretty much going to kind of somewhat stay consistent as far as the salt loads and those kinds of things. We basically have a lot of sodium in this water that comes because that water is coming through the Grand Canyon and down through between Arizona and California. It's going to have a chance to really pick up some sodium. So we have to deal with the sodium issue. So the key word here is the one that Brian loves is drainage. So,
oh, you know, no, so Bo, you had to open that door for Brian.
So drainage is of utmost importance to be able to, you know, keep this stuff working properly and keeping our calcium levels up. You know, that's the other ticket, is keeping our calcium levels up so we can get that water moving through and keep the sodium from attaching.
Now, we did get into that conversation at our soils clinic that we had recently, and I made mention that the first time we had Neil Kinsey come and do some training with us, he spent a whole day only talking about calcium. He felt it was that important. Is it that important for you in the Imperial Valley too?
Yes, it is. I mean, you know, the trick is you take situations here where you have the right amount of calcium and the right amount of magnesium, and, you know, I don't care what kind of crop you want to put in, it's going to shine, you know. Because there's so many things that happen with that deal. If you have low calcium numbers, you just don't have the pore spaces there for water and nutrients to move through that soil profile. And magnesium levels here, we have some ground that's 40% calcium, 40% mag. So that stuff will stay wet for a long, long time because of that high magnesium. And because of that, when the ground stays wet like that, you'll have sodium that will wick its way to the surface. I mean, there's lots of places in this valley that looks like it snowed, but it hasn't. It's just sodium on the surface, you know, or real high magnesium on the surface. I mean, there's some spots that literally look like it has snowed today, but, you know, we haven't had any snow here in a few hundred years. So, it's a situation with sodium that it's really important to get your calcium levels up. And with that, it also improves your nitrogen efficiencies. If you can keep your calcium levels up, it really improves your nitrogen efficiencies, and you can use less fertilizer. That's cool.
Yeah, that is a great way to save some money and actually make some money farming if you can be efficient with everything that you're putting out there. We're talking with Bo Shropshire out in California. He's a soil fertility and ag production consultant. Bo, thank you so much. Really appreciate all the knowledge that you share with us, and thanks for talking about some of the crops that don't get enough attention on our show as well.
Yeah, exactly. You guys don't talk too much about artichokes and zucchinis and asparagus, but you know, every once in a while we get a pop in there. So
absolutely.
Thanks, Darren.
You bet. Thanks, Bo. We're talking about soil sampling on today's Ag PhD radio show. We're also taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
A pasture should have two things, grass and cattle. No weeds, no brush. That's why Chaparral Herbicide offers the broadest spectrum weed control available. It controls weeds other products can miss, like buckbrush and Canada thistle. And less weeds and brush in your pastures means more forage, so you spend less on feed. Chaparral also suppresses seed heads, lessening the effects of fescue toxicosis, all while providing season-long residual control. Visit NoWeedsNoBrush.com today and learn more about Chaparral.
We know balanced crop nutrition pays. AgriLiquid has the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop, plus the expertise to give you a recommendation based on your soils, your fields, and your goals. AgriLiquid has the phosphorus, potassium, and micronutrient products necessary to deliver the best results from a solid fertility program. Visit AgriLiquid.com to find a dealer near you.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free GrainBridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at GrainPhD.com.
The Grain Temp Guard from Farm Shop MFG has helped farmers keep their bushels safe from spoilage and shrinkage loss in bins all across the country. And this low-cost solution just became even more affordable. Farm Shop MFG is offering a $100 factory rebate on all Grain Temp Guard bin monitoring systems. This offer is available for a limited time only, so take advantage of this program now to upgrade your bins and protect your crop investments. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
Now that harvest is in the books, it's time to start thinking about your plan for the next crop. Using a pre-emerge herbicide in your soybeans is the best agronomic choice you can make to ensure control of tough weeds and grasses before they wreck the rest of your season. Authority brand herbicides from FMC keep your soybean fields clean from the start. Research trials have shown that applying a pre-emerge herbicide at planting can preserve up to 20 bushels or more of yield potential. With multiple options to fit your soil types, tillage practices, and weed management needs, Authority brand herbicides deliver the pre-emerge power to fight glyphosate-resistant weeds before they take root. How do they do it? Two modes of action keep resistance in check. Rule your fields with dual modes of action. It's not too late. Visit your FMC retailer or FMCAgUS.com to learn more. Always read and follow label directions, restrictions, and precautions for use.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here along with my brother Darren. We're live in the Morton studio today talking a little about soil sampling. If you've got a question for us or if there's anything you'd like to talk about that's going on in your farm, just give us a call here, 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can also email us, radio@agphd.com. We will get to the Ag PhD mailbag here in just a little bit. But before we do, I just wanted to kind of wrap things up on the soil sampling. I said earlier in the show, and I'm really super passionate about this, go to small grids. That will help save you money. And I know you're going to spend a little more money up front. It's going to be a little bit more work, but trust me, even just do it on a few acres and you'll see what I'm talking about. We want to try to eliminate variability in fields, and we absolutely don't want to waste money out there spending money on fertilizer that we don't necessarily need that actually could make things worse rather than better. And this is especially true when we start talking about pH adjustment with lime, but I could say the same thing about over-applying almost any nutrient. If we put the wrong stuff in the wrong place, we got problems. Plus, we wasted money. Plus, we're probably going to have to spend more money to fix the mistake that we made. So I say go to small grids because of our mistakes and all the stuff we've screwed up in the past, and I really don't want to go through that again. And so hopefully, if you just follow that rule, you won't make these same mistakes and you will be much more profitable on your farm. Next thing is when you're out soil sampling, what I always tell people to do, I don't care if you're in zones or grids, whatever you're doing, but you have to have a GPS point. And the reason why you have to have a GPS point to go to in each zone or in each grid is so you can repeat that in the future. Because here's very commonly what we see. We have people that will do their tests 1 year, and then they'll give us test results from 2 or 3 or 4 years later. And they say, okay, why did it change so much? And I go, well, did you pull the sample in exactly the same spot? And they go, well, you know, it was close. It was the same area in the field. I go, well, that's not enough. We want to be in the same spot. So it's just like if I went out to my cornfield and I looked at 10 corn plants and I go, okay, I'm going to track these till next week. And then I go, you know, 25 rows away the next week and I look at 10 corn plants and I go, well, they're different. Well, of course they are. They're different plants than what you looked at the first time. Pick the same spots. So pick a GPS spot in your zone or in your grid. And then what you're going to do, what I want you to do is drive to that spot, pull a couple cores on each side then of your vehicle, just walk right around the vehicle. This literally should take you 1 minute. And in 1 minute's time, you've got 8 cores. You just dump that in the bucket, then dump it in the bag, send it in, done. And then you go to the next spot. So we want repeatability. The next thing when you're sampling is make sure that your soil probe is always going into the same depth. So just like Bo was talking about, okay, you might do 4-inch, you might do 6-inch, you might do 8-inch, you might decide, hey, 12 inches is what I want to do. That's up to you. But all I'm saying is make a mark on your soil probe and just make sure that you go down to exactly that depth every single time so you have a representative sample. And then the final thing that I would tell you is make sure that you keep your probe straight up and down. If you start getting at an angle, then you might not be going whatever. Let's say you're going 6 inches deep. You might only be going 5 inches deep. Well, that's not a representative sample anymore. Always keep your probe straight up and down. So again, small grids, always have a GPS spot and just pull samples right around that GPS spot. And make sure you're pulling at least 8 cores. I usually tell guys 8 cores is good enough. Some people say 10 or 12, but for me, I would say 8. That's super simple. 2 on each side of the vehicle, done. and then you jump back in, you can take off. And anyway, then the final point here is make sure that you keep that probe straight up and down and always go to the same depth. Once you get these sample results, if you would like us to take a look at them, we're more than happy to. There are many things that are going to be on that soil test, but I'd say this, it's not that complicated. What we usually do, like at our soils clinics, is we just go through steps 1 through 12 and take it one step at a time. When you do that, then life is a lot easier. Otherwise, when you first look at a soil test, you're going to go, oh my goodness, this is really super complicated. I don't get it, and I got to turn it over to somebody else. And my argument to that is always, look, in your lifetime, you might spend $10 million on fertilizer, maybe more. I think in my lifetime, I might spend 50. Well, if I spend $50 million on something, I think I darn well better know about it. And you might say, well, you know, Dad or Grandpa never taught me that, so how important can it really be? They were smart guys. Why didn't they ever teach me that if you're saying it's that big a deal? Well, here's why. Because their yields stunk. Their yields were terrible. And that wasn't their fault. That's just the way things were. Okay, so I look at my grandpa. What was he getting? 50, maybe 100 bushel corn? Okay, well, I'm shooting for 300 now. That's a whole different ballgame. And then here's the other thing. Farms were way smaller back in those days, and everybody had livestock. Growing up on our farm, we had livestock. We were spreading manure all over the place. Okay, so today, you know how much livestock we have on our farm that we own? None. We rent our pasture ground out, so we have no livestock. So what are we doing? I mean, over the last 30 years, we've been buying a lot of commercial fertilizer. And for that matter, even if you are spreading manure, you need to know what you got. Because if, I mean, just think about this for 1 second. If let's say you've got manure, then what you're telling me is fertilizer should no longer be a limiting factor. But I'll bet you, in fact, I'd promise you, it still is. Your job, and I mean our job, our challenge all the time as farmers is to figure out what's the one missing thing from every acre we've got that could really boost our yields and then hopefully boost our profits. It might be manganese. Maybe it's boron. Maybe it's zinc. Maybe it's an excess of something. Maybe it's a soil pH deal. I don't know. But all I'm saying here is fertility is so unbelievably huge, and it's an enormous separator from farmers who are successful and those who aren't. And it all starts with taking good soil samples. So if you got more questions for us about that, just email us radio@agphd.com. But it's time now for the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
All right, Brian, let's dive right in. We got into this on Friday. We had a couple of questions here that had come in from Jeremy in central Minnesota. And here are the soil samples once again. They picked up some ground. They've been adding chicken litter, putting on beet lime to address the pH. Trying to build up phosphorus.
Is this the one where he had a massive question and he gave me all of minute to try to answer?
I had a bunch of P and K out there building those levels.
All right.
So we kind of got through his first question, but his second question was, we've got some areas with low magnesium. Since we're adjusting so many other big things like P and K and adjusting calcium levels with lime, should we give it a couple years before we get too excited?
I see no areas that are real low on magnesium. There's nothing below 10% here. I wouldn't even worry about it. You're fine.
Okay. That was a big thing. And then finally he said, what would you recommend for a planting population on this ground in the first couple of years as we get going? They've been averaging around 200 bushel corn just for a start anyway, but just wondering if we should run with 7 bushels per 1,000 as a rough guess just to get going.
As a rough guess, sure. So what we do a lot of times on our farm is we will vary the planting population based in part on the soil type. So we've got some sand belts that run through some of our fields. And where we've got sand and no irrigation, well, you can't expect massive yields there. So in those areas, we're cutting our populations back. And then we're going with higher populations where we've got lots of fertility. But yeah, I mean, I'd say 7 per 1,000 is probably a good starting point. So what that means is, let's say it was 210 bushel corn. That means you would multiply the...
So say at 30,000 population. Say at 30,000 population. 30 times 7 would be 210 bushel corn.
Thank you.
So that's a good place to start. Right. And yeah, if you want to vary a little bit, you can do some strips or do some parts of the field or something a little bit higher, a little bit lower, right, to see what you get.
So the range is a lot of times 7 to 10. So you just take your 210 divided by 7, that's 30. Or you take the 210 divided by 10, that's only 21,000. So our point is, if you're really, truly on every single acre only hoping for 210 bushel corn, you really only need a population probably in the low to mid-20s.
All right. Thanks for the questions. We really appreciate that, Jeremy. We'll get right back with more of your questions after this.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
If you're a rancher who's obsessed with keeping your pastures clear, turn to Grazon Next Herbicide. It offers superior broadleaf weed control, so instead of thinking about weeds, you can think about the money you'll save growing more grass and buying less feed. Used early in the season, Grazon Next also provides residual activity that controls newly emerged weed seedlings, giving you season-long control. Start enhancing your land while you protect it. Visit leavetheweedstous.com to learn more about Grazon Next. Always read and follow label directions.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Revitec fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
How much yield did you lose the moment you planted your seed? Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer tired of seeing yield loss from poor stands, the Germinator gives your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
Increase your productivity with Hypro's Dual React Control System. The dual nozzle body design allows you to drive at the speed you want while maintaining the rate and droplet size you need. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic herbicides from Atticus LLC. Tough broadleaf weeds are a hassle, but they're no match for Cavallo from Atticus. Cavallo delivers fast, contact, and residual control so your corn, soybean, and sorghum crops can thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit atticusllc.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time, where we're taking your calls and agronomic questions. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, Ag PhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. All right, got one from Nick in central Nebraska. He said, I've had some issues with lodged corn on the farm, and I have never run tests for iron, manganese, and copper before, so I'm sending you some, and I'm just kind of curious what levels you'd like to be at. We're targeting a 6% base saturation on K. I know that's really important for standability,
yep,
so I'm curious about these micro levels, and then if I can put them in furrow or in a 2x2, or if there's a better method of application.
Okay, here's the challenge that I've got. He's running a DTPA test, which is nice because we're very, very familiar with that, But the problem is different labs run it a little bit differently. Usually, like on a Midwest Labs test, we're talking about, hey, I want that manganese 20 to 40 parts per million. His are 5 to 8, I'd say, on average. And copper, you know, I don't know. I'd probably want that 2, 3 parts per million, something like that. And all of his, I shouldn't say all, most of his are under 2. So my suggestion is talk to that lab and see what they would recommend for, and tell them, hey, I'm going for whatever your yield goal is. Let's say it's a high yield goal. What do you recommend? I mean, just when I look at it at first, I assume that both the manganese and copper are low. But again, I don't know exactly how they're doing the extraction method. If these are Midwest Labs tests, I would tell you absolutely we are low. We need more copper and manganese. I'd also say on the base saturation test, you know, we very often talk about 4 to 8%. And certainly when we start going for big time yields, throwing lots of population out there, throwing lots of nitrogen out there, then usually we'd like to see 6, 7, 8% base saturation K. He has a few that are in the threes. Now, here's the other challenge. It just says 3. So I don't know if that is 3.1. Is that 3.8? What is that? Same thing with, I mean, it's just a single number, 3, 4, or 5 is what all of his tests are showing here. But yeah, several are in the threes, and we know already for sure that's too low. But keep working on the K. I most likely would be putting some manganese and copper out there as well. Now, in terms of how you're going to put it out there, that's really up to you. I would just say we like to build the soil, especially when we're very low. But I would also look at feeding the plant a little bit. We do that very often with both a little bit of in-furrow fertilizer, or you can certainly run some 2x2, and doing some foliar feeding as well. So if you want to really track this thing, you could do some plant tissue analysis as you go throughout the year, and you could certainly supplement a little bit as you go along. But you've got, it looks like, medium textured soils here, so you can certainly hold quite a few nutrients out there. So I would certainly work on building the soil, but also be looking at, especially in my high yield fields, high yield areas, feeding the plant even more with maybe a little bit of foliar and, like I said, a little bit with the planter. All right, what you got next, Aaron?
Thank you. Great questions there. All right, next one, Brian. This one is also from Nebraska, and this one comes from Alan, who we got this sample just before our Ag PhD Soils Clinic, so wish we would have covered it right before then, but we didn't get it done. So he said, I'm going to see you at your soils clinic, so we may have answered some of these questions there, but Alan said, here's a new field that I picked up. I know it needs tile. I'm going to get that done in the spring if possible. Otherwise, I will get it done next fall. I'm just curious what you would see on that soil test and some things I should get working on right off the bat.
Okay, so to begin with, it doesn't say what lab this is. I don't think. I'm not finding that anywhere on here. Darren, you had made some notes quick. What did you see?
Well, I guess what I was looking at, Brian, is my first thing when I get something from a different lab, and you may notice, Brian, I can move from one soil test to another pretty quick here. My first thing is just getting my bearings straight. So I found where the soil pH is and look at what the pHs are at. You can see the range.
Yeah, so a lot that are low, but not all of them.
Up at the top, what's the range, high, low, and average?
4.8 to 6.3 with an average of 5.4. So it obviously needs lime, assuming we're talking... did he say, are we talking corn, soybeans here? What are we talking?
Corn, 143 corn. Acres or something in this field.
Okay, corn. Yeah. So, yes, definitely too low on corn. So, absolutely need some lime out there. Now, as I say that, 6.3 pH needs no more lime. Okay, we're perfect on that. That's
roughly
right where we'd want to
be. 2.5 acre grids. We got about 57 grid points for 140 acres, roughly.
Okay.
So, somewhere right in there. Is that good enough for spreading lime?
Well, in his case, almost everything is low. Where I really start getting worried about it.
You don't have
it,
much risk because you don't right. have a whole bunch of eights out in there, too.
Right. Where I start getting worried about it is in fields where there is some high, there is some good, and there is some low. So then I really like seeing smaller grids, and I just tell guys I'd go to 1 acre grids in that case. But for him, it looks like everything is, well, it is this way. Everything that he's tested is 6.3 and below. so he doesn't have a lot of risk. Because worst case scenario, even if he hits a spot that happens to be 6'3", gets some lime out there, it's not the end of the world. I mean, I don't like it. It's still a waste of money. So you got to be real careful with that. But anyway, most everything he's got's in the fives, if not even the fours. So not a lot of risk there. So that's the first thing that I would say. Beyond that, let's see. Base saturation K is one thing I'm always looking at. And I was mentioning this earlier in the show.
Look at that range.
Exactly. I was mentioning this earlier in the show. There's a lot of variability in your field. Okay, it goes from 2% all the way to 12% on base saturation K. 12%. So 12 is a lot. And my point here is don't put any more out there. You don't need any more when you are up that high. So be a little bit careful with that. And this, by the way, is all medium to heavy textured soils. So it's not like it's super sandy and you're going to lose it or you don't have a lot of parts per million or anything like that. No, you've got a lot of parts per million and you got a really high base saturation K in some areas. But in other areas, it's terrible. You got as low as 2% on the base saturation K. So you have areas that desperately need K and other areas that need none. On phosphorus, same kind of deal. Range of 5 all the way to 81, and it's a Malic 3 test, so we'd say that's similar to like the P2 or the strong Bray test. So, yeah, I mean, you got a bunch of spots where you absolutely have to get a lot more phosphorus out there. Personally, I like seeing, if it was my farm, I like to be at 100 parts per million on that Malic 3 test. But, you know, the 81 certainly is not bad. But where you've got 5, 6, 10, 12, I mean, you got to do something, and you got to do it quick. Beyond that, let's see, micronutrients. Did I even see? Oh, yeah, you got manganese on here, iron, copper, boron. Did you see zinc, Darren, somewhere? Oh, yeah, there's zinc. So anyway, all the micronutrients are on there. Most are low, especially boron. Boron is really low. But, yeah, most are low other than the iron. Iron looks pretty good to us. And, again, it's spots. You got spots that need almost everything, and you got other spots that are, I'm sure, yielding phenomenally well because they have almost everything other than the pH needs to be changed almost everywhere. So there's my super quick summary of what I'm looking at here.
All right. Thanks for the questions, Alan. And thanks for coming to the Ag PhD Soils Clinic as well. Congratulations picking up that new field. And hopefully it works out good to get that tile in. That'll be helpful for you as well.
Yeah. Isn't it frustrating, though? How often do you pick up ground and you go, you know what? It's all perfect. I don't need to change anything. So what have we established here? Needs tile, needs lime, needs almost every possible fertility thing, at least in certain areas in the field. I mean, it can almost be a little bit disheartening when you first hear that, because right away you're thinking, great, I got some new ground. And then you realize, oh, no, I got to spend a whole bunch of money there. But, you know, these things pay off in time. And one of the challenges with farming is just it's such a long-term payoff for certain things. It takes time, and many times it takes years. And then once you finally get it paid off, you've got the ground in great shape, you know, then you're going to start feeling really good. But, I mean, let's be realistic about this thing. It's going to be 3 years before we say, okay, now I've got most everything fixed out there. It's a little process, but get started working on it now, and you'll get there sooner than you think.
All right, got a question from Adam. He said, I'm wondering if you've ever used potassium sulfate and had any luck raising base saturation K with it. We've been trying to raise ours with potash, and we haven't really seen a big result. I was told potassium sulfate may be more effective,
nope,
but it's twice the cost. So yeah, I was wondering what your thoughts are.
Yeah, it will not be more effective. I don't have any problem with potassium sulfate, but cost, that's the big issue. So no, you absolutely can raise your base saturation K with potash. Give us the information, send us a soil test, whatever. A lot of times we hear guys say, oh, it's not raising my base saturation K. Well, they've got super heavy soil and they just simply weren't putting on enough.
Or it got spread on the top, and it's so caught up in that top inch of soil.
I don't see that too much. But the other big thing is that we're using a crazy amount with really high yields.
All right, thanks for all the questions today, and thanks to you for listening. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.